12 o'clock hour, Chase, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McCabe, Derek Mason with you. Willie's had to step away for a few minutes, but will rejoin us here in just a little bit. Every Wednesday at noon, we talk to Jonathan Hutton, Outkick 360, weekdays 2 to 5 on 94.9 The Fan. Also a part of our post-game show that you can see after Titans home games and a few select road games as well. Jonathan Hutton is presented by Blend Bar with Davidoff Cigars and Edley's Barbecue. Hut, how we doing?
Guys, good afternoon. Doing well. Ready for a little Thursday night football action tomorrow. And, yeah, our next post-game show, Chase, correct me if I'm wrong here, will be after the Bengals game 10 days from tomorrow.
That is correct. It sure will at Landshark Bar and Grill. So you and Chad Withrow will anchor that coverage, and looking forward to that as well. So let's start with this game tomorrow night, a quick turnaround. And I'm going to tell you, Hut, the guy that – I mean, we know this Titans team. They have a ton of injuries. Tannehill's not 100%. There's all of that. But the guy that I am really, really concerned about is the man in the middle, Ben Jones, who's currently in the concussion protocol.
Yeah, that's a big deal because he is the glue guy for everything they're about on the offensive line. If you think about over the last couple of years – and the mixing and matching that they've done up front. Ben Jones has missed time. He's missed a play. He's missed a series. But for the most part, that dude is the toughest guy. Well, not for the most part. He is the toughest guy on the team. Pound for pound across the league, for that matter, for what he means. And you saw what he means to Vrabel after the game against the Colts a couple of weeks ago. So, yeah, they'll have to move guys around if that's the case. And certainly – concussion protocol in a short week, that's not easy to overcome. It's not easy to travel a guy like that and expect him to test out in time for game day.
Yeah, and you know, here's the thing. You mentioned that phrase, glue guy, and that's why I think Mike Vrabel gets emotional whenever he talks about Ben Jones and what he's met. I look back, and he's got to be one of the best signings this team's ever had. Started his career in Houston. You know, underlying numbers, I don't know if Canton will come a-calling for him one day, but, I mean, he's a Hall of Fame human, that's for sure. And having him on this team, I think, has been huge for the Titans.
Yeah, I mean, so when I think of Ben Jones and the signing, I think about guys, and look, guys are just built different. But I was on the sidelines in Indianapolis, the game that Chance Warmack, like, jammed his finger and decided in the middle of the game that he wasn't going to continue the game, and he ended up having hand surgery. This is when the Titans were awful. Ben Jones has been a part of some bad teams as well.
Yep.
There have been plenty of times where he could have tapped out too and just said, hey, I'm going to go ahead and have this surgery now and get ready for the offseason, like Chance Warmack did, and then he ended up signing with the Philadelphia Eagles. Again, guys are just wired different, and they have agents telling them certain things. And in Chance's case, he was going into a free agent year. But you get where I'm going here. The guy plays through literally everything, and as he ages, those things only get more difficult. The one thing you can't play through is a concussion. So that's literally the only thing other than like a broken leg that would keep Ben Jones off the field, and I'm not even sure if he would agree with that. So he embodies the toughness aspect that they want. He's also a great leader. And look, he's a quiet dude, right? He goes about his business. Yep. He backs up everybody in the locker room. And that is exactly what they want in a veteran player. And that trickles down throughout the locker room, not just from the head coach, but through guys like him.
We're talking to Jonathan Hutton, Outkick 360. And the last week, the Packers beat the Cowboys in part thanks to their former head coach, who now coaches for the Dallas Cowboys, and Mike McCarthy. But they ran the ball. Aaron Rodgers only threw it 20 times. Now, he had 3 touchdowns on the day, but they weren't throwing the ball a whole lot. You look at Aaron Rodgers' stat line, it doesn't look like a typical Aaron Rodgers. But you know that this Titans defense is pretty good against the run, and you know that the Packers defense is not good against the run, and that's going to be the bread and butter for the Titans. So do you feel like that the game plan favors the Titans, even though they're not the favorite on the road tomorrow night?
Yes. Well, hang on. It favors both teams on a short week because both teams want to run the football. But it does favor the Titans in the sense that defensively, Green Bay doesn't blitz that often. They don't. They try to get 4 or 5 man pressures at most, and because of that, I think that opens up them to the run. I think this is a Derrick Henry game, and I'm interested to see how he's used, because if you look at his numbers over the last 2 weeks, the numbers are not what they were like compared to what he did against Indianapolis or against Houston. So I want to see where he is in that, and I think this is a short week game plan where they could certainly pound the rock and play solid defense. But you're right, Chase. I mean, they're running the football very well. They have a two-headed monster in the backfield. Aaron Rodgers only completed 14 passes of those 20 attempts, but he threw for 224 yards and 3 touchdowns on those 14 completions. So they opened up the game. Christian Watson, who, you know, dropped a big pass in the end zone early in the season, and it's almost been like he's been in Rodgers' doghouse when he's been healthy since then. He dropped a couple of passes early against Dallas, but then they came back to him, and there was an explosion factor to their offense, even though they weren't throwing it all that much. So I do think they've opened up some things, and there's a quiet confidence, even though we look at their record and think, are they really trending back up? Because they've got you know, a couple division leaders now after they had that win last week against Dallas. But the Packers last week rushed 18 times for 93 yards in the first half. They were tied 14 all, and they got down 14 in the second half and had to throw the football. And this was a game where the Packers actually came up with the big plays. Rodgers only had 6 attempts in the first half. They want to run the football. And because of that, if the Titans can separate the score a bit, it gets them into an element they're not comfortable with, and that's passing. Although, when they did last week, they hit Dallas for some big plays. They gashed them. They gashed them in the run game last week, though.
We'll talk with Jonathan Hutton, Outkick 360. Now, Jonathan, for a while now, this team with this quarterback, Ryan Tannehill, he has taken a lot of blame for this offense. And you know, sometimes rightfully so, sometimes it may have been a little bit too much. But do you believe we're starting to really understand how important Ryan Tannehill is to this offense? Because we only truly got one guy that we lean on, and that's Derrick Henry. But without Ryan Tannehill, we have no signs of life in the passing game. But when he comes back, the passing game is not, you know, Patrick Mahomes or anybody else, but it does pick up a little bit. But you see how important, truly important, he is to this team when he's healthy.
Here's the difference between Tannehill running the offense and Malik Willis in the game. Mace, Tannehill started the game last week 3 for 10 passing. They were not good on like their first 5 or 6 drives. 3 for 10 passing is like a full. Tannehill finished the game with 36 attempts. That's a season high. There is no way Malik Willis goes into a game and starts 3 of 10 passing and finishes 16 of 26 and puts up 10 points in the second half, which, by the way, tied a season high for second half points. They have a new season high in second half yards. I was critical last week and pointed out how bad they've been in the second half, and that includes Tannehill too. Last week they got it done. I mean, they had 150-plus yards passing. I credit Todd Downing for the play call on the return to sender from Henry to Tannehill to Nick Westbrook-Ikhine. But another example, the first touchdown in the second quarter, Tannehill made a great throw. Great catch by Ikhine as well. But that's Tannehill, to your point, running the offense and making a throw and scoring a touchdown at a crucial point where 10-7 feels awfully different than 10-3 going in at half. So, yeah, they need him. They don't win last week without him, even in a game where Denver's only putting up 10 points.
He's Jonathan Hutton, Outkick 360, joining us for another segment, as it's all presented by Blend Bar with Davidoff Cigars and Hutton, Edley's Barbecue. Why don't you tell us more about him?
Well, so Thanksgiving's coming up. You need to go to edleysbbq.com. And you can go ahead and reserve full sides, family-style sides. for Thanksgiving that you can grab the day before, next Wednesday, and then warm it up in the oven and have it ready to go for Thanksgiving Day. It's great. They've got the full menu for all of the Thanksgiving feasts that you would want to provide, everything that Chase McCabe would certainly enjoy. And look, you can book online. Here's the thing, though. It's great for catering, anything from the holiday parties that are coming up to weddings, rehearsal dinners, work gatherings, big or small, but also tailgating. They've got wings in the small or medium big platters, and then all of the great sides, pulled pork, tender turkey, and everything in between. It's delicious. It's family style, and it's Nashville-style barbecue, a tradition here in the mid-state, but also across the great state of Tennessee. And they're now open in Donelson to go along with East Nashville 12 South and in Sylvan Park. To learn more, simply go to edleysbbq.com.
Chase, Willie DeMace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Jonathan Hutton of Outkick 360, weekdays from 2 to 5 on 94.9 The Fan. He's presented by Blend Bar with Davidoff Cigars and Edley's Barbecue. Blend Bar with Davidoff Cigars is the go-to spot in Nashville for the best old-fashioned, can confirm. A nice, relaxing cigar and lots of high-end spirits and wine. DeMace?
Now, Jonathan, we had this conversation this week, Caroline and I, and Willie, I believe he was on at that particular moment. Why is it, well, why has it been, and I'm not going to say easier, but why has it been so, why has the transition from one guy to the next been almost flawless when talking about the Titans defense and the guys they're able to plug and replace and plug and replace? No, they're not Jeffrey Simmons. No, they're not Bud Dupree. But the guys that come in, they do a damn good job at keeping that defense going. The defense can do that, but why can't the – it just seems like the offense can't for some reason.
Yeah, and look, I think they're asking more of certain players on offense to rise above – hang on, let me – so Nick Westbrook-Ikhine is not a number one receiver, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He's being asked to do that. I'm judging him. Well, maybe that's a stretch, but I'm saying we shouldn't judge him to be a number one, even though it's their fault he's in the number one role. It's not like Pierre Tart is asked to be Jeffrey Simmons, mm-hmm. right? Like that, I think that's the other thing here. They are extremely good on that side of the football at diagnosing exactly what's going to make a player great and allowing that player to go do his job. And on offense, guys aren't just stepping up and making those same type of plays. Now, Ikhine did it. Ikhine, to his credit, had the first 100-yard receiving game since A.J. Brown against San Francisco on Thursday Night Football last year by an individual wideout in this offense. He had two touchdowns for the first time since A.J. Brown did it. And then you have to go back to Rishard Matthews to find the other receiver that had two touchdowns in a game prior to A.J. Brown doing it multiple times. Point being, there are more individual players every given week that step up and make those type of plays defensively. And I think it doesn't stand out as much as, oh, the offense can't move the football, because I think on defense we're seeing guys track down players and make a big stop in the backfield. Or, you know, I'll even go as far to say, like, Hassan Haskins on kick coverage. Mm-hmm. You know, like, that different things like that get left out of the big play highlights. And whenever you look at a stat sheet, you don't see the big play highlights on a weekly basis offensively, unless it's from Henry or Tannehill. You know, I think we tend to look that way, and that's fair. As much as I raise my hand here, others are certainly doing it too, as much as we bash the offensive coaching staff, the defensive coaching staff is legit. They have an elite defense, and they were elite last week, given the fact that they only allowed 10 points and zero second-half points. They have the best second-half defense in the NFL since their blowout beatdown in Buffalo. Since week two, they have the best second-half defense, and they've allowed the fewest points in the NFL total. They're allowing 15.1 points per game since the Buffalo beatdown. they have rallied around their mantra, mm-hmm. and they do their job and they step up. And we don't see that on a weekly basis from the offensive players as a routine. We see flashes of it. We do not see it on a weekly basis.
Now, the reports are coming out with Caleb Farley that he has back issues once again, and he's getting evaluated by doctors. I looked at this kid, and I was the one that said, "Listen, he's not a corner in this league because of what has happened to him." This is a guy that got injured in college after moving from receiver to cornerback. He gets injured. He didn't come into the NFL healthy, and now he's dealing with the second back problem. But you drafted him in the first round, and you put all of this pressure on him to be an immediate starter, knowing that the issues he had in regards to his health. Now this kid may not return, this season, or may not return, period. I just think Caleb Farley, even though I don't believe he's a corners league, I think he could probably play safety. But I just thought he was behind the eight ball from the start. You're drafting a guy that's injured, that hadn't played the position for a long time, but you're drafting him in the first round, and you expect him to do first round things when his body says no, and you knew it.
I know. And so also consider, I think this also played a factor in it. And PK had this report from Indy at the time. So that was during the COVID year. And only a certain amount of team doctors were allowed to, evaluate certain players who, had health concerns, or you wanted to go through the gauntlet of every injury possible at Indy at the Combine. And, of course, he didn't work out at the Combine because he was hurt. But the Titans, according to Kaharski, they were one of the teams that were able to do that. So I think that factored into their overall evaluation. And I mean, I go back to that time. There was a lot of discussion about Caleb Farley as a top 10 prospect if he's healthy. But then you see it's not just an ACL, which he had in college. It's not just, a herniated disc. And that's it. It was a lingering thing that was an issue. And then I'll never forget the first time the media chatted with him. He's sitting in the car and he rebuked the injury question in the name of Jesus. And you're thinking, what have they done here? Is this guy going to be able to play? Because they need him. And you start looking around. And last week, Mace, I was looking at the defense. They're, mm-hmm. they're in six defensive backs. And Farley's on the sideline. Just, and I'm like, what is this? This is not good. He's not going to be a player you're going to pick up the fifth year option for. So, he's going into year three, and then, right now, expect more of the same, because even when he's healthy, they don't play him. He's a special teams dude. When he's healthy, they don't put him at safety. And this is a team that puts Amani Hooker at nickel. So I don't know what to make of him or how they've evaluated him. And given the fact that he's injured and it's a back issue that's flared up, according to Teron, that's more egg in the face of, at the time they vouched for the injury and said they weren't concerned. How could you not be? And it's been nothing but a disaster since he was given the opportunity to play. And when he's had the chance to be on the field, he's quickly been taken off of it.
Talking with Jonathan Hutton, want to hit you with some college stuff real quick before we let you go. The top five comes out last night. No change there. Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan, TCU, Tennessee. TCU, I was wrong on them. I thought Texas would beat them. It's kind of looking like they might actually run the table. I think Baylor is probably their next test coming up this week. But to me, Tennessee's road is still there to get into the playoff, because Ohio State, Michigan still have to play. You buy in that it could very well be Georgia, Ohio State, TCU, Tennessee when we get to the playoff?
So Withrow has flipped me on the concern level. I'm not that I'm not that concerned that they're going to miss out, because I do think at the end of the season, there's always chaos. No one saw UCLA losing last week to a bad team. TCU surprised me, though, with Texas, because it's the first game this season where they failed to reach 30 points. And I thought that was kind of the line for them because Texas was like 2-9 under Steve Sarkisian when the opponent scores 30 or more. And they won 17-10. They won playing the Texas kind of style instead of the TCU style. So they didn't have to come back in the fourth quarter to win. So I'm with you there. The one to worry about, though, and why Withrow, I think, is going to end up gaining more support from me, I'm on the lookout for USC more than I am TCU. Mm. Because if you have a one-loss USC Pac-12 champion, then consider their schedule coming up, where they've got UCLA this week and then Notre Dame. And knowing that Caleb Williams is right there in the thick of it for the Heisman. This has not been a very well or highly hyped Heisman race to me. It's C.J. Stroud, Hendon Hooker, Caleb Williams, I think. But I would agree with that. Okay, but consider, I don't think many people have.
Oh, no.
At the end of the season, is about to make an impact, and he's playing for Lincoln Riley, who the media loves, and rightfully so. He's playing for USC, who won four games a year ago. They have a chance to flip the script and win the Pac-12, and he's playing for a coach who's known for putting quarterbacks in the Heisman race. So I think because of that, USC will gain some steam, and it's unfortunate. It shouldn't be this way. Tennessee's better. I'm not trying to make that argument. That's why I'm confident that the committee should be able to look at these two teams and tell who's better right now. But the problem is, no matter how many points you score in Missouri, no one watched that game. You know, if I'm on the committee, like, I'm scanning through that game, no one sat through and watched that game. And you're going to sit through and watch USC. Ohio State is certainly going to be on full display on national TV, but TCU is the story because they're going to continue to have the marquee games in marquee times as well. So where I'm headed with this is I think USC gains steam more than, you know, TCU losing. That's a bigger concern. But still, personally, I would put the Vols in.
Yeah, no, so would I. And I think USC, look, their next two games are not going to be easy by any means. They're at UCLA and Notre Dame. I mean, those are two ranked teams that I think could be tough for them. So it's just something to pay attention to. I might throw Drake May in the Heisman conversation.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think you see four or five guys there. I think if Drake May was going to have the steam for a Heisman, we'd be talking about him like Johnny Manziel.
Yeah. That's fair.
We're just not hearing that. Like, there's no momentum in that direction, and he's fully deserving of it. But, I mean, I think if you polled half the college football audience, I don't think they could tell you that UNC only has one loss. So, they would guess, like, two or three. So, I think, again, it's not fair to the situation, and it's just one of my pet peeves. I think a lot of the voters, especially in the Heisman race, they don't really pay attention to much of college football. They follow the narrative, and they vote how they hear they should vote. It's groupthink, and they don't actually watch college football. Again, my opinion on that. But there's just so many of these dudes across the country that are not sitting down on a Saturday grinding this to a point where Drake May, if he's not Johnny Manziel hype worthy, is going to win that award this year.
Real quick, because I'm going to ask Derek the same question. You know, Baylor and Iowa State for TCU, would a Big 12 championship game against, I'm going to assume it's K-State, at least that's what it looks like right now, would that concern you? Because they only beat them by 10.
No, it wouldn't. Because I think it's USC because Ohio State or Michigan is going to win that game. Now, the interesting thing is, what if Michigan gets Ohio State?
Right. If TCU loses to K-State, like, not that K-State gets in, but like, if you're a TCU fan, you got three games left and getting a loss, does the Big 12 championship game against K-State and the rematch concern you?
Yes. Yeah, oh yeah, for TCU, yes. But they just continue to answer the bell. Like, I was doubting them, and I'm just not going to – I just can't doubt them again. Like, they always answer the bell. Like, I expect them to lose, but I don't know why I do that because, you know, every time I think they're going to, even when Vegas has Texas as a 7-point favorite,
right?
TCU goes in and wins by 7, and it's not even like – it's a competitive game, but it's not like TCU was threatened on the road there. Again, I'm a big fan of them. One loss, though, they're out. I mean, they were behind Alabama, a two-loss Alabama, when the first rankings came out. So I judge these rankings based on what the committee's thinking every week and where teams are each week and how they move up or down. USC jumping Tennessee is the only threat. If TCU loses, they're out. If they win, they're in. But the only way that they're in and Tennessee's not is if Michigan beats Ohio State and the committee keeps Ohio State in.
We'll see. It's fun. And I'm with you. I love the chaos with college football.
More chaos.
Yeah.
More.
It's going to happen. All the scenarios. The scenarios are fun to talk about, but the committee's telling us how they view certain teams based on where they rank them. Like,
yep.
I was curious to see if TCU would jump Michigan this week. But yeah. Michigan had a good performance against Nebraska. But again, TCU continues to answer the bell. And because they didn't, I think that's a one-loss TCU. They're out. And Michigan and Ohio State have a good shot of both getting in if Ohio State loses a tight game there to Michigan.
Yep, for sure. Hutton, appreciate the time as always. We'll be listening today starting at 2 on 94.9 The Fan.
All right. Hey, I'll see you soon, Chase, D-Mace at Blend Bar on Printer's Alley there.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. He's Jonathan Hutton, Outkick 360, and he is presented by Blend Bar with Davidoff Cigars and Edley's Barbecue. Coming up next, I am going to ask D-Mace about the college football rankings and what we think as the season is coming to a close very, very soon. That's all next. Chase, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Hey, join us tonight for Smashville Live at 6 o'clock. We're going to be at Brewhouse 100 in Bellevue. You can see Predators stars Kevin Lankinen and Ellie Tolvanen. They will be there tonight and get autographs, pictures. Smashville Live presented by Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Little Harpeth Beer, and Superbook Sports. Darren McFarlane, Hal Gill will have coverage of that starting at 6 from Brewhouse 100. Discussing the college football playoff and the chaos, I believe Willie is back with us as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now
I am.
So I don't know if you heard our conversation there at the end with Jonathan Hutton.
I did.
As we get into the chaos for college football, Derek just threw something at me in the break that I think is an interesting scenario, because I was going to ask him about TCU. If you're a TCU fan, would you be more concerned about a rematch with K-State in the Big 12 championship game as being the blemish, as you would Baylor and Iowa State? And I think the answer to that is yes. But then he threw out a scenario to me that I'm going to let him set up for you that I think is quite interesting when it comes to seeding the four.
Yeah, Willie, because we've always, or at least over the last 3 or 4 weeks, we just assume, okay, listen, Georgia continues to win. They're in, obviously, if they win the SEC championship. Even if they don't win the SEC championship, I think they're still in. But we assume they're the best team in the country. No one's going to beat them. They're in. The winner between Ohio State and Michigan is in. So let's say, under this scenario, Michigan wins. TCU runs the table, and they win. All right? No. I said TCU lost. So TCU loses. In the championship.
Do we agree that if TCU wins out,
no, but they,
they're in?
If they win out, they're in. But
if
say
they lose, TCU is in.
Yeah.
If TCU loses one game, they're out.
So you got two.
I agree.
So you got two undefeated teams in my scenario. You got Georgia and Ohio State. Georgia and Michigan, both of them undefeated.
Okay.
Now you got Ohio State with one loss. You got TCU with one loss. You got UT with one loss. And you got USC with one loss. Who do you think gets in now? Under this, do you think then two of the top five conferences, well, three of the top five conferences will be represented under that scenario? Because To me, it's Georgia, Michigan, Tennessee, and then possibly USC if TCU loses in their championship game and SC wins. All of them have a loss. So which one loss team do you put in?
Well, number one, I think if TCU wins out, as we just said, if they're undefeated, they're going to be in.
No, I said they lost in their champ. If they lose in their championship game, yes.
And if they lose one,
it's a close game. It's a close game in a championship game.
Doesn't matter. I think they'll be out.
I do not think TCU gets in with one loss under any circumstances.
Okay, so that eliminates TCU. Now you have Michigan, Tennessee, and SC, and you still have Clemson.
All right, so This is presuming that LSU doesn't mess stuff up and beat Georgia, right?
Yeah. If Georgia finished the season and the championship, all of it, they finished 13-0, or Michigan finished 13-0, but everyone else has one loss, and okay, now so Clemson's back in it.
Okay. So you have Georgia, Michigan, 1-2 undefeated.
Yep.
And then for the next two spots, you're asking about one loss TCU. They're out.
Mm-hmm.
One loss Tennessee. One loss Pac-12 champion USC.
And one loss Ohio State.
Well.
But Clemson, again, Clemson is still there if Clemson, they win their championship.
Clemson is not in this conversation.
I do not believe Clemson. I don't think Clemson can get there with one loss. I think the ACC is just not powerful enough to get there, to get a team in with one loss over what Tennessee's resume is, even though they're not the league champion. I'm a big league champion guy. I am.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's not close, then I think you have to take that into account.
I'm going to be honest with you.
It's a down league. Undefeated is different than one loss in a weaker league. If it's a weaker league and it's one loss, that's different than undefeated in a weaker league.
I would have
the league champion.
I would have Tennessee 3. I have
no problem with Tennessee.
I would have Tennessee three. Tennessee is in. So to me, it really comes down to Ohio State, USC.
That's what has to be the concern with Tennessee's position, because if it's an Ohio State Michigan classic, and the loser loses by a hair, and it's a great game, a one loss Ohio State versus one loss Tennessee and a league champion USC. I think league champion USC with a Heisman Trophy quarterback, I think the Pac-12 was a little bit better than the ACC. The loss was early for USC.
And they lost by 1 point.
So it basically would come down to UT and Ohio State.
And I think that would be a really interesting
thing.
Ohio State, UT.
Okay, let's do this coming up. Go through each game for Tennessee, Ohio State in this scenario, and then we make the decision.
Okay.
If we're going to say in this scenario, Derek's scenario is the only undefeateds are Michigan, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
What are the other two teams? We'll do that. We'll take your text and call 615-737-1025. Chase Willie D-Mace, 1025-1063, the game. Chase Willie D-Mace, 1025-1063, the game. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick, Derek Mason. Here with you talking college football playoff and the chaos that could ensue and probably will ensue.
I hope it does.
Will in Clarksville says, if you don't win or at least play in your conference championship, you should not be considered for the playoffs. I disagree.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly disagree.
Then what does it matter with the games played in the regular season?
Exactly. Regular season don't matter then if that's the case.
So here's the scenario that Derek has laid out there. What if Georgia... they go undefeated. We know they're in. They're number one. What if Michigan beats Ohio State? They're undefeated. They win the Big Ten. They're in. So 1-2 are undefeated. Then you got TCU that falls in the Big 12 championship game in a close game. So they have one loss. Tennessee has the one loss to Georgia. USC has one loss to Utah. They win the Pac-12. Derek is insistent on putting an ACC champion one loss Clemson in this conversation as well. So if you look at Tennessee, we know their schedule. Destroyed Ball State. Tough game against Pitt, at Pitt, but they win. Akron, Doesn't matter. They beat Florida 38-33 at home this year. They destroy LSU on the road, and that law or that win is looking better and better because LSU has beaten Alabama. They're a good team. Tennessee turns around, beats Alabama 52-49. That Alabama was the third-ranked team in the country at that point. Then UT Martin, they destroy Kentucky, which Kentucky doesn't look as good anymore, that win, because Kentucky's just completely fallen off. And then they turn around and they lose to Georgia. Tough first half against Missouri, but then they turn it on in the second half. Then they got South Carolina, Vanderbilt. That is the resume for Tennessee. They're not going to play in Atlanta for an SEC championship because they lost to Georgia. All right. Ohio State. They have a win against, at the time, fifth-ranked Notre Dame, 21-10.
Which, that's, the win still looks good.
It's looking better. Yeah, uh-huh. It's looking better now. Arkansas State, Toledo, Wisconsin, Rutgers. Sorry, Derek. Michigan State.
They caught us on a bad day.
But, I mean, way Michigan State's playing.
Yeah, right. We won two in a row, so there we go.
Iowa, Penn State. At Penn State, 13th-ranked team in the country at the time, 44-31. Destroy North – well, actually, they had a hard time against Northwestern.
Yeah, they did. They
21-7.
Rough, yeah.
So they have a hard time against Northwestern, destroy Indiana, and then they're at Maryland and then Michigan at home to wrap up the season. That's their resume.
Their resume doesn't scream out the who's who. It does it. It unfortunately, you know – thank God they are, you know, the Ohio State Buckeyes, and they have a long tradition of winning, and they've always been one of the top two or three teams in the country over the last, you know, 4 or 5 years. That's the only saving grace, because this schedule of theirs, it's not, like I said, it's not the who's who. It's a very favorable schedule.
Yeah.
To Ohio State. And you know, frankly, Michigan's the same way. That's why
I think Michigan's schedule is a tick worse than Ohio State's.
Yeah, you might.
Yeah,
be right,
because they
that.
Don't have a good non-conference game.
No.
Yeah.
In there.
No.
I agree that if you look at the Ohio State resume, their best win is at Penn State, and Penn State is a good, solid team. 8-2 on the year. They've only lost to Michigan and Ohio State. They're a very good team. But that's your best win. The second best win is against Notre Dame. Notre Dame's an important thread in a lot of this because Notre Dame beat Clemson. Notre Dame's got to play USC. So for USC to get to where they need to go, they need to beat UCLA, their rival, Notre Dame, and then win the Pac-12 championship game. That's three tough games that they've got to win to be in this position, in this picture at all.
So, and I'm going to tell you, I like UCLA this weekend at home.
Tennessee's chances are really, really good when you get down to it. I think it's unlikely that TCU goes undefeated, which they'll have to do to go over Tennessee. I think USC has got a very difficult path, and I think Tennessee is going to go over a one-loss Michigan or a one-loss Ohio State. So those are three really good things that you have going for you.
Mm-hmm.
And really, when you get down to it, only one of them has to happen, right, for them to get in. Is my math right? If we got Georgia and we've got
Michigan,
Michigan, or whoever wins Ohio State, Michigan, right? It's one or the other.
Yep.
Those two will be in there. So then the only other wild card is if LSU gets into the picture by beating Georgia. So there's a
Which
lot
again,
that has to happen.
Well, if LSU beats Georgia, that opens it.
It does.
They're
it
in
does,
discussion.
But it doesn't. It does, but it doesn't. Like, I, you know, we got passionate about this. Mm-hmm. I still would tell you that Georgia and Tennessee's resume is better than LSU's, even though LSU has the conference championship.
Absolutely. And I'm not, you know, there's no questioning.
Caroline.
Yeah, there's no questioning. You know the schedules and who's played sort of the tougher schedule, and who hasn't. You know, for me, if Georgia does lose, I think everybody, just about everybody in America, can say, hey, listen, Georgia's still, I mean, they're still the best team in the country. there's no doubt in our mind. Just because they lost to LSU, LSU has gotten hot and they're playing well. If it's a close game, they lose to LSU, then I think many would still have Georgia, you know, in the top four. Let's say that. I'm looking at, you know, Clemson. I think under my scenario, when you only have two undefeateds and everyone else has a loss, I think Clemson still has a say, because if they win their conference, then Clemson can say, hey, listen, our schedule at the time that we played our schedule, and I know since then, a lot of these times, especially Wake Forest, because they didn't drop three in a row, that's really hurt Clemson. They beat Wake Forest, who was ranked in the top 25. They beat North Carolina State, who was ranked in the top 10 at the time. They beat Syracuse, who was a top 15 team at the time. And then they would have, right now at this point, at the end of the season, it would be North Carolina, who's currently ranked 13th in the committee's poll. So, to me, they still have an argument to say, if we win the ACC championship, we still got an argument to get in the college football playoff.
I don't think they have it over Tennessee.
It wouldn't be over. I'm not saying over Tennessee. I think Tennessee is sort of that standalone team beside Georgia. Because, yes, they have a loss, but look at their schedule. No right. one's – there's two other teams that played a harder schedule when you talk about strength of schedule. But UT has dominated their schedule.
They have.
So to me, all but one game. So to me, this is not about, you know, UT's in. If that happens under that scenario, my scenario, it would be that fourth team that Clemson, to me, would still have an opportunity and an argument.
The thing that worries me about this whole thing, and this is why they're going to expand, because they can avoid this. There's going to be two things. Let's say that TCU loses, USC loses a game, they're out. LSU loses to Georgia. I still would say that that the true argument in a top four in any particular order would be Georgia, Ohio State, and Michigan in Tennessee. But is the committee going to go, oh, we're going to get so much crap for putting all SEC, all Big Ten in the finals, so yeah, we'll put Clemson in over Michigan because they lost Ohio State. You know, I do worry they think like that. Well, the second thing is, let's say that, you know, Tennessee and Georgia both get in, and you do have another conference. You know, you have USC as a conference champion. Do you set it up where Tennessee and Georgia don't see each other until the championship game?
I guess you would have. I mean, you could do that. But even with your scenario, I think, excuse me, if it's coming down, say if Ohio State wins in Michigan and it's the one loss team, and it's between Michigan and Clemson. At the time, I'm looking at Clemson's schedule. I'm saying they played a tougher schedule than Michigan. Michigan may have looked like the better team at times, but Clemson only has one loss, and they played the tougher schedule.
Right.
And they won their conference championship.
Yeah.
That's just like an add-in. I'm not basing it all on winning the
Could you guys imagine, though, if it turns out that it's Georgia, Ohio State, Tennessee, Michigan, that's the top four?
Oh, people would be so upset. Oh,
some would. Some
would love it. But there are, you know, the ACC, Pac-12, ACC, Pac-12, and the Big 12 would be upset.
Sure. Of course they would. But that's why they're expanding to get rid of that. Coming up next, we're going to revisit our 10 Titans questions that we had before the season. We'll do that coming up. But first, Willie, you have a word on Lee Company.
All right. Let's talk Lee Company. They're a proud sponsor of our Nashville Predators coverage. It resumes tomorrow. The homestand continues. Nashville is in a stretch of 8 out of 9 at Bridgestone Arena, and you'll see Lee Company all over it as a sponsor of Nashville Predators hockey. Our radio coverage tomorrow night starts at 6 o'clock with Max Hurst as the Predators take on the New York Islanders. Lee Company is a sponsor of our pregame coverage. Also, their display is all around Bridgestone Arena, so enjoy that. And as I say all the time at this time of the year. It's a great time to join up to the home maintenance plan that gives you year-round coverage and checkups on your heating, your cooling, plumbing, and electrical systems at your home. If you want to be on top of things as a homeowner, you want those year-round checkups because they're going to find those little problems before they become big problems. And they'll make those recommendations. And if you're part of the home maintenance plan, you get discounts on those repairs. Lee Company's the way to go. 615-567-1000 or go to leecompany.com.